For a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best. Located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, NFC Championship Game edition of the show. Been waiting a long time to say that. I'm Bobby Fenton. Thanks for joining us wherever you are, however you're getting ready for Sunday at 3.05 p.m. when the Bucks take on the Packers at Lambeau Field, 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl. Here in Tampa are the Bucks. Of course, the same can be said for the Packers, and this will by far be the toughest challenge these Bucks have faced in the playoffs, despite the fact that they had a nice, smooth win over Green Bay back in the regular season. So we got a lot to get to on the show today. You know, obviously we're going to break this matchup down, look back at a couple things from the Saints game. And I do want to just right off the bat, though, talk about how special it is, even though it doesn't feel, you know, I think back to the last time this happened in 2002 with the Bucks and the Eagles. And it's only been three times in my life the Bucks have played in the NFC Championship game, 1999 being the other one. And if, I don't want to say if you're old, but if you've been around a few, if you're in your 40s at least, then you were around in 1979 and the first NFC Championship game. But I remember the 2002 NFC Championship game, the Bucks and the Eagles. And I remember waking up the morning of the game. I've still tried to get this newspaper cover, and I can't find it. This is back when we still had the Tampa Tribune and what was then called the St. Pete Times. I can't remember which one it was. But on the front page of the paper, I think it was the front page of the whole paper, not even the sports page, there was just a giant picture of the Bucks at Veterans Stadium. And they were right on top of the Eagles logo at midfield, and they were in their helmets and jerseys and like sweatpants, and they were just having a walkthrough, and it was just showing them like just going through, just getting, you know, a practice on the stadium field, and like a giant 3-inch headline just said, "Are you ready?" And I remember waking up that morning and looking at the paper, and at this point, I guess I was 22 years old. I had graduated college the spring prior, and I was as jacked up at that moment as I've ever been for anything. Like, even though I played sports, things I've done, no, like, picking up the paper that Sunday morning, getting ready for the NFC Championship game against the Eagles, and I could have run through a brick wall right then and there. I distinctly remember that, and I remember watching the game, a bunch of family members were there. I remember driving down to Raymond James Stadium, impromptu after the game ended, just to see what was going on, because I had a feeling something might be going on, and realizing that half of the entire metropolitan area of Tampa Bay was there, and people high-fiving in the streets and hugging. And I mean, I remember sitting on top of my friend's car has a sunroof. And I remember just sitting on top of the sunroof while the car was driving down Himes, just leaning out and just high-fiving people along Himes. And the Bucks team plane flew in like right as that was happening, dipped the wing and like circled over the stadium. I mean, it was incredible. And maybe partially because I'm older now, and it doesn't mean I'm still just as much a Bucks fan as ever, but you know how it is. I talk about this on the show sometimes. You get older, and maybe when you're back at the age I was, like college and going back to high school and through the 90s, you know, then it probably means a little too much because it's all you have. You don't have anything going on. You know, you got school. I played on the football team, and, you know, it's not like you have a wife. You don't have kids. You don't have all the things. You get other stuff going on, and you know, maybe it just doesn't have as prominent a place in your life. And that's a good thing, by the way. I'm not trying to say it's not. I mean, you shouldn't be too nutso with this stuff. But yet, I think back to 2002 and the way that Sunday morning was and how weird this whole year has been and how barely anybody got to go to any games and just how it's going to feel different on Sunday, I think. I don't think I'm going to wake up, and maybe I will. I don't think I'm going to wake up and see the headline, which we barely even have a paper now, although we will get one on Sunday. This is how many things have changed. Like, now there's only one paper instead of two, and now it only gets printed on Wednesdays and Sundays, although Sunday there will be a paper, so maybe that part will still be the same. But it's been 45 years of this franchise. This is only the fourth time they've ever been this far, and this is the first time they've won two times on the road to get to this point. And now they go to Green Bay against a team that they beat by four touchdowns back in October. I don't think it means that much. I mean, the Saints beat the Bucs twice in the regular season, and you saw what happened this past Sunday. But as we get ready for the game, I wonder what it's going to feel like, because it hasn't felt the same this year for obviously reasons we all know about. And yet, and the same thing happened with the Lightning, and the same thing happened with the Rays and stuff like that. But this is different, man. Like, the Bucs are the only team of all of our teams that have been here, at least my whole life. Some young people, you know, maybe it's no different. But, you know, back when I was born in 1980, and, you know, back then, all growing up, it was the Bucs. That was it. There was no Rays. There was no Lightning. There was college football, and there was the Bucs. And like I tell you guys all the time on this show, there are so few things in my life, at least, that are the same now as they were when I was 7 or 10 or 12. So many things change. And outside of my actual family members who I've known this whole time, the Bucs are one of the only things, maybe they're the only thing that is the same now at age 40 as it was at age 8, which I think is really cool. So win or lose, and I have no idea, folks. I mean, I think the Bucs have a very good chance to win the game, but at the same time, I could see how they're, although it's a very small underdog, I could see how they're an underdog. And if I was a neutral bettor, I probably, you know, would think, yeah, Green Bay, you know. But the point is, win, lose, or draw, I just can't wait to just feel what it's going to feel like just to be watching the NFC Championship game with the Bucs in it. And again, I remember how it was with the Eagles game, and I remember the energy, just the energy. There's those things that are bigger than just, you know, kind of like, okay, this is something I'm doing. There's certain things where, like, I remember the game against the Eagles. I remember when the Bucs would score a touchdown or something good would happen in that game. You could have been outside in the street, not even watching, and you could have known it. Because it wasn't just anyone. Like, everybody, like, literally everybody in the area was locked in. And you could hear the cheers coming up from different backyards or different living rooms, and people had the windows open or whatever. I mean, you just, again, you didn't have to be in anybody's house. You could just be walking down any street, anywhere in the area, and you would have heard that. That's how fired up everybody was, and that's how in it together everybody was. So I hope it's the same type of thing on Sunday. I'm really excited about it, and we're going to get you even more excited about it here on the show today. The Free Stretch is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, our good friends over there, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, where they've always been serving the area for 60 years now. You can go there and see everything. Huge showroom, huge lot, all the inventory's there. They've got all the social distancing measures you need. Everything's taken care of. You want to stay home? Go to the website, BillCurryFord.com, C-U-R-R-I-E. That's BillCurryFord.com. All the inventory's on there, too. Search it. Get your pricing, everything done. They will bring you the car. Just a test drive. Not even the one you buy. They'll do that, too. Just you want to say, hey, I like this one. Let me just check this one out. They will bring it to your house. You can test drive it or your office or anywhere, really, you tell them to. And if you end up making the purchase, same thing. It's all done for you, no matter how you want to do it. Check them out, and no matter what you do, you get the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty. You can bring the car back in if you have engine trouble or something. Years down the road, as long as you're still the owner and you bought it at Bill Curry Ford, you get the first year oil changes taken care of at the service center. 10 years roadside assistance comes with it, too. It's all part of the package. You get it all, so check them out, BillCurryFord.com. That's, again, C-U-R-R-I-E, or go to the place itself, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry. So, first thing I want to talk about is the Saints game just for a little bit here. I know, you know, that when I do my show on Thursdays like I'm doing now, the games that happened the past weekend kind of fade a little bit. But the defense and the effort in that Saints game exceeded, and I'm usually an optimistic guy, and we talked about some things on last week's show about what the Bucs would need to do, but I think we could all safely say that exceeded everybody's expectations, right? I mean, the Bucs had four turnovers forced, and it, listen, turnovers are always big no matter what. I mean, if you have a 4-0 turnover ratio, you're probably going to win the game like 95% of the time or something like that. But the way the Bucs offense was working on Sunday, which is to say not much at all, actually it was their second worst EPA per play output of the season on offense, only behind the first game at the Superdome. For their two worst games of the year offensively have been at the Superdome. So the offense couldn't get anything going, but they scored three touchdowns off of three of the four interceptions, and the fourth one, the Bucs ran out the clock. And those were their only touchdowns. The Buccaneers did not score a touchdown on any of the eight drives that didn't begin in Saints territory, but they had an average starting field position of the 40-yard line in Saints territory because of those picks. And to their credit, the offense cashed those in. But again, when you look at the combined yardage they had to go for those three touchdowns, it's 63 yards. Okay, and that was huge because the offense really didn't have it going. You know, these quarterback matchups, and we got another one this weekend with Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, but the last one was last week with Drew Brees and Tom Brady. And oftentimes these quarterback matchups, you know, they get hype. Quarterbacks are the biggest names, and everybody knows them, and they're the superstars. And they don't often live up to the quarterback billing, and that one certainly didn't. Brees was very, very bad, and Tom Brady was not, I mean, he was better. He wasn't great, though. And other factors decide these games. You know, there's 11 people on the field at once, not just the quarterbacks. But the Buccaneer defense, and particularly the play of Devin White, who from literally the first play of the game, when he smacked Alvin Kamara for no gain at the line of scrimmage, was sideline to sideline, wall to wall. Of course, the game-clinching pick. I mean, how Derrick Brooks-esque. Not that I want to keep comparing Devin White to Derrick Brooks, because he can be his own guy. But how didn't it just give you that look with the outstretched arms and the way he grabbed the ball and the stiff arm? I mean, and that was just the final play, or the final deciding play of the game. But he was amazing all game long, as was a lot of the young guys for the Buccaneers. I mean, you look at Devin White, who was drafted last year. You look at this past year, and Antoine Winfield makes what I think was the play of the game. I mean, we forget, you know, after you win the game and it's 30-20 and you're kind of taking a knee and you feel like you got it under control, it's easy to forget how close the Bucs were to losing that game because they were down 20-13 and the Saints hit a pass to complete a big third down into Bucs territory. And here comes Antoine Winfield ripping the ball away from Saints tight end Jared Cook and the Bucs recover. And if that play doesn't happen, the Bucs are staring 27-13 in the third quarter, smack dead in the face, and I don't know if they come back from that the way the offense was playing. They probably, I mean, almost certainly they don't come back from that. And the Saints were cooking. Again, they picked up that third down. Cook had it, had the ball, runs upfield for a few more yards. Winfield rips it out, and from that point on, the Buccaneers scored 17 unanswered points and won 30-20. But it was about to be 27-13. Maybe best case 23-13. Even that would have been tough, down two scores late in the third quarter or early fourth quarter, whatever it was. So that was huge. I mean, that was a huge, huge turning point. And I don't know if that, again, I don't know if that happens. The whole thing, I don't know if it happens without what he did. The Sean Murphy bunting interception was huge. And then you had, of course, like I mentioned, the Devin White play. And to see the youth on defense come through, really, really encouraging. Carlton Davis didn't get his name called a lot. That's because he was busy not having his guy targeted much and not having Michael Thomas catch a damn thing. It was beautiful. He just, I mean, the lockdown effort was, it's going to be a lot tougher this week, okay? Because you all saw it, Drew Brees. And hats off to him, great career and everything, but I just loved every second of the Bucs being the ones to end his career. And in the playoffs, no less. But Drew Brees, you could tell he was not feeling great. You could tell, I mean, his arm's not there. It felt like he gave everything he had to give, and he just didn't have anything left to give there in that fourth quarter as the Bucs hounded him, pressured him, knew that he wasn't going to be able to get it downfield. And it ends up that, you know, the four turnovers are one of the worst performances Brees had against the Bucs at any point in his career, and it's a fitting end. Aaron Rodgers feels just fine from everything we've been able to see. And that's going to be the key match, and we'll talk more about it coming up in the show. But what the Bucs defense is able to do against him is the single most important thing, in my opinion, of what we're going to see out there on Sunday. And we'll talk about how the Bucs look to handle Aaron Rodgers on Sunday compared to what they did to him in the regular season game, and if that's a good strategy. We're going to talk about all that. It's interesting, though, because, you know, same thing goes for how the Bucs handled Brees. We talked on the show last week about what? Remember we said, hey, here's some pretty glaring numbers here about Brees' quarterback rating when the corners are rolled up versus when he's in a soft zone or when he's facing corners in a soft zone. So we talked about how when there's a cushion, that both DBs give on Saints receivers, Breeze's QB rating was like astronomical through the roof. But when you roll up both guys, it plummeted. Except the Bucs didn't like to do that. And we questioned, you know, is Todd Bowles going to do it? I know he knows the stat that we were talking about. I mean, I know he's not dumb. And yet I was like, you know, it feels like they're just going to do what they do. It's just the way they are. But they didn't. They rolled the hell up on Sunday against the Saints. And it paid dividends. And again, like, you can look at previous regular season games when you play a team and you can see what worked and what didn't. You can make adjustments, all that stuff. And sometimes that requires getting out of what you normally do because a certain team you're playing against likes it when you do what you do. So maybe we need to do something else. And that's going to come into the play again this week when they play the Packers because of the way Rodgers is against the blitz and the way the Bucs handled him with the blitz in the October game. We'll talk about that coming up. But I was impressed. I really didn't think the Bucs had it in them. And when I saw the corners rolling up and they did that for, I lost the number. I had a tweet that said, I think it was like almost two-thirds of the game they did that. And it paid some big, big dividends defensively. Oh, I forgot to mention Tyler Johnson's catch, too. I wanted to mention that real quick. I specifically made a note because that's another one where we don't know if they come back and win that game. It was third and 11. Third and 11 is not a great down to begin with, but you're not expecting Tyler Johnson to be the guy on a third and 11 to make the play. But right near the sideline, a 15-yard completion, and the ball was like in an awkward spot, and Johnson had to twist his body, and just nothing but his fingertips reeled it in as he went to the ground. Just an amazing catch. Scotty Miller had another big one after that, too, for 29 yards. Those were two turning point plays. And, you know, they didn't get a ton of production from the big guy. You know, Mike Evans had the three-yard touchdown. That was his only catch. Gronkowski, Godwin, not much. You know, all the big superstar names. Antonio Brown, who is not practicing today, by the way. He had the knee thing. He didn't do much, and yet, you know, the Bucs found ways. So they're going to need to do that again against Green Bay. Speaking of the injury, since I just mentioned it, first of all, Vita Vea. And I'm recording this right now on early afternoon on Thursday, so I can give you what they've done on Thursday as far as injuries. If you're listening to this after Friday's practice and stuff, things may be different. Vita Vea is out there, all right? We thought he was out for the season. Bucks have won enough games to where he can come back, and you go on Twitter if you follow any of the Bucks people. I'll retweet some of it here in a minute. You can follow me at Bobby Game Day. But there's video of him. He looks pretty decent. There's nothing hardcore, like, you know, they're not showing hardcore pass rush drills or, you know, Bama's or Oklahoma's or anything like that. But he looks very capable. And they're saying he's only going to go about 20-ish snaps, but it gives them more. Like, their rotation now up front, because not only that, but Steve McClendon's back. And so, you know, you got Vita Vea, Sue, Golston, Nunez Rochus, Steve McClendon now, and Ledbetter is back out. So the full rotation up front could be, well, they should all be there, and they should all be close to 100%. Ovea is not maybe quite 100%. Even if he is, he hasn't played football in, you know, almost 3 months. So just having him out there, though. And Joe made a good point on Joe Bucks Fan. If you follow the Twitter feed with Joe Bucks Fan, he thinks, they think, that Vea is being brought back not necessarily to be some pass rush force, but just to eat up some blockers so that the other guys, you know, that's what we've talked about Vea before. It's not just what he does, it's that he's always double teamed. He's so strong. He'll take on a guy with his right hand and a guy with his left hand. He'll have two linemen, you know, like the dumbbell bench press versus the barbell bench press, where instead of the barbell, you get a dumbbell in each hand. That's what he does. He dumbbell bench presses offensive linemen, so he gets one on each side. And that, you know, even if he doesn't get anywhere, if he just holds his ground, all of a sudden now he's eating up two guys, and that frees other people up. So that having him back is big. And I don't know how he's going to play, and I don't know how effective he's going to be, but having him back is big. Antonio Brown's been taking it easy on the knee. He was not at practice on Thursday. That doesn't mean anything's terribly wrong. They're going to obviously take it easy. So we'll see if he is unable to play or if he's not effective. I'm pretty sure he'll be out there. I mean, it's the NFC Championship game, so he'll dress. But, you know, you do have Tyler Johnson and Scotty Miller who can step up, and they've shown that they can step up and do that. So, you know, injuries look pretty good. There's a reason, and if you look at the numbers over the years, teams with the bye are 5-1 against the spread, not even straight up, against the spread in conference championship games since 2013. Green Bay had the bye. You know, the stuff does accumulate. That extra week off is a big deal, and the Bucs were playing at Washington when Green Bay was off on wild card weekend. It is what it is. We know that. There have been plenty of wild card teams that have advanced to this point and beyond. In fact, the last three wild card teams to get to the Super Bowl won it, all with three road games. So sometimes you get a home game for that first one. But going back to the 1990, when they added the two wild cards, there have been plenty of wild card teams that have done this. But, you know, injury-wise, it does help a little bit. And so looking at the rest of the things that stood out to me when looking at this matchup, Aaron Rodgers, okay? Bucks came into that game in, what was it, week 8? I can't remember, but it was in October. And they blitzed Rodgers. And the Bucks have not been great with the blitzing since that game. But in that game, and Rodgers, this is the weird part. The Bucks haven't been great with their blitzes since that game, and Aaron Rodgers has been awesome against the blitz in general, but that one game, it worked out great. The Bucks blitzed him. He was 5 of 16 for just 48 yards and had two picks against the blitz in that game. But again, the rest of the season, Rodgers has had 15 touchdowns and just one interception against the blitz. Meanwhile, since that game, the Bucks defense has allowed 13 touchdowns with just one interception when blitzing. So what do you do? Do you say, well, this thing worked against Rodgers last time, we're going to do it again? Or do you say, this really hasn't been working for us in general, maybe we shouldn't do it, but it did work this one time, and this is the same team that it did for that one time? You know, they need to get the hell home if they do, because, you know, Rodgers will carve them up otherwise. And again, this isn't Drew Brees shot putting the ball, just trying to get it there. I mean, you know, Rodgers can surgically dismantle their defense if they don't get that just right and strike that balance of when to do it, when not to. So that's going to be a big challenge for Todd Bowles. And play action's another one. Rodgers is the number one quarterback in the league in QBR off of play action. He's got a 94.2 rating. And so, you know, that's something they've used very effectively. There's going to be adjustments on both sides, but it's something to watch how often the Bucs decide to blitz. You can just cut them loose. You know, they have Devin White, and he showed what he could do, and having him back is big. Or you could say, well, you know, this, we could get burned on this. You know, it's going to take some balls to win a game like this, though, okay? You're going to have to take risks, and you're going to have to, you know, I mean, you can't just go out there and just protect yourself from risk and still win the game. You're going to have to not just take risks, but succeed when you take them. It's as simple. And that's a lot of things in life, not just a football game. So that'll be a big challenge for the Bucs. It'll be a really big challenge, in fact, for the Bucs defense and their front seven in general. If you watch the Packers-Rams, and that game got close a few times, but it never really felt like the Rams were going to win. But the Rams front seven are pretty good, right? A guy named Aaron Donald and some other ones. And they didn't get anywhere near Rodgers. I mean, they didn't give him any problems at all. So that was, when I saw that, that was a little bit concerning. I was like, you know, it's not going to be as easy. And I didn't think it'd be easy against the Saints. It ended up being a lot more of an advantage for the Bucs than I thought it would be, but it won't be that way against Green Bay. Like, they're really going to have to come up with some cool stuff, because these Packers can get the ball out quick. Rodgers knows what he's doing, and he knows not just how to do it, but physically can get it there. And, you know, it ain't going to be like it was in October. Let's put it that way. So looking at some other things about the matchup, everybody talks about the weather. It's not looking too bad. I mean, it's going to be in the upper 20s, and the snow, I mean, there's been some reports that it's going to snow during the game. Others have the snow happening earlier in the day and then it not snowing during the game. Obviously, no one knows exactly for sure. They'll be able to pinpoint it more as we get closer to the game itself. But the stuff with the weather, you know, any Bucks fan that's been a Bucks fan for, you know, going back through like the 90s and at least 10, 20 years, everybody always heard, oh, the Bucs can't win in the cold. And really, as you look at the early years of the franchise, they were just bad. They didn't win many road games, period. But they were 0-21, their first 21 times in weather under 40 degrees. So then, the year they won the Super Bowl, hey, all of a sudden they actually had a good team instead of a bad team, like most of those years. And the cold weather wasn't a big deal anymore. They won their first time in weather under 40. Actually, it was not in Chicago. It was in Champaign, Illinois, where the University of Illinois is, because Soldier Field was getting renovated, and the Bucks played the Bears on the University of Illinois campus, won the game 15-0. It was their first ever sub-40-degree win. Then they did it again a few weeks later in the NFC Championship game against the Eagles, which I'm sure you all remember. And then since then, they had only played in weather under 40 degrees as a franchise three other times before this year. 05, a loss in New England. 08, a loss at Carolina. And in 2011, a loss at Green Bay. I remember that game. LeGarrette Blount went off in that game, but it just wasn't enough. And then this year, they've had two games in cold weather under 40 degrees. The win on a Monday night against the Giants, and they won again in Washington 2 weeks ago. So if you look at their cold weather record, the last seven times they've had one since 2001, they're 4-3, okay? And they've won two straight playoff games in weather under 40 degrees. So it's not as big of a deal. Like I said, people always made such a big deal about that, but really it was just the Bucks being bad in general in the 80s and in the 90s. And, you know, those old NFC Central days, they'd play at Chicago and at Green Bay every year, and a lot of times one, if not both of those, would fall on a day when it was pretty chilly. And those Bucks teams weren't winning those games no matter what. Now, as far as snow, I mean, we'll see how much the snow ends up being a factor if there's snow. They've only played one snow game ever, and you got to be a real hardcore Buck fan to remember this one. 1985 at Lambeau. I was 5 years old. I actually remember the shirt. I was wearing a little Buck shirt with a white torso, and it had orange sleeves. I remember this. I was in kindergarten, and I remember watching the game at my old house on Kathleen Street, and that was like not just a flurry. Yeah, that was a snow game. Like, if you remember, and you can see highlights or pictures of it if you Google it, but it was inches and inches of snow just piled on top of snow. It wasn't as bad as that one, Buffalo and I think the Colts a few years, or no, that was the Lions. It was Buffalo and the Lions, I think. But there was one of those that was even worse. It wasn't quite that bad, but it was one of the worst snow games, or best, depending on your perspective. That's the only time Bucks have ever played in snow. We'll see if that ends up being a thing or not. As far as stadium capacity, they went 10% against the Rams, so it was about 8,500 people. So expect the same thing with that, which I always say, it's nice to have somebody in there. Even watching on TV, it makes a difference. It makes it feel more like a normal football game. And the difference between 0 and 8,500 people is a bigger difference to me than the difference between 8,500 and, you know, 60,000. Because when there's nobody, you really feel like, I notice it. And even when there's less than 10,000 but enough, you hear noise, you hear crowd reactions and things like that, and it just gives it a feel. So that's something to look at, but I don't think it'll be a big deal. As far as just some little nuggets, and not that these mean anything, but I always like to find them and I always like to give them to you in case you're interested. Since 2013, home teams in the conference championship game, this is the last seven seasons, are 10-4 against the spread. Teams, like I said earlier, with no bye are 1-5 against the spread in the conference championship game since 2013. This particular postseason, these playoffs going on right now, home teams are only 5-5 straight up and 4-6 against the spread. So it hasn't been that big of a deal in the playoffs so far, although the Bucks were the only road team to win last week. Brady, for his career, he's been in playoff underdog 8 times. He's 5-3 in those games straight up and against the spread. If you're a betting type, this is one to keep in mind. Since 2017, there have been 7 playoff games played in 30-degree weather or less. It's not 40, but 30-degree weather or less. All 7 of them went over. So people think, you know, oh man, the cold weather. You can score points in the cold. And you can certainly, if it's snowy, you can throw in the cold. In fact, it's easier because the receivers are the ones that know when they're going to stop and cut, and the DBs don't. So you can definitely move the ball. And it's happened again 7 times in a row where the playoff game with 30-degree weather or less went over. The over-under on this game is 51, by the way. Here's one. I don't think this means anything, but I still couldn't not say it on the show. Teams with a 20-point regular season win to play that team again in the conference championship game. This isn't all playoff rounds. This is just the conference championship. But teams with a 20-point-plus regular season win against the same opponent in the conference championship, 13-3 in the rematch. That describes the Bucks, who beat the Packers 38-10 in Green Bay back in Tampa, I should say, back in October. And if you look at the Bucks as a franchise, this will be the 18th playoff game they've ever played. They are 8-9 in the previous 17, so a chance to actually be 500 as a postseason team with a win here, and more obviously set themselves up with a berth in the Super Bowl. Bruce Arians said, though, he said they shouldn't be thinking about the Super Bowl right now. He said, if you're thinking about the Super Bowl right now, he said, you're probably packing your bags on Monday. You're thinking about Green Bay. You're thinking about one football game. You're thinking about your opponent. That's it. If you win, you can let it all wash over you then, that not only are you going to the Super Bowl, but it's going to be here in Tampa. And if you live here, like I was driving down Dale Mabry the other day, and there's signs of it all over town. I really wish this was a normal year, because it's always so fun when we have the Super Bowl. Like, it's such a fun thing. I'll talk more about it, you know, in the next couple weeks. Whether the Bucks win or lose, we'll talk about it, you know, hosting the Super Bowl. But you can see the stadium all decked out. They're putting all the signage up. There's a giant fence perimeter around the whole place, which I'm not crazy about, but I get how it works these days. But not just over by the stadium. If you're downtown, like the other day I was downtown driving by Julian B. Lane, the riverfront park there on North Boulevard right next to the river. And that's going to be like where the Super Bowl Village is, where all the interactive stuff will be and things like that. And they're putting everything up for that. And it's just exciting. Like, I'm one of those guys, and I'm not a NIMBY. Some people just don't like anything that disrupts anything ever. I like having just action, just stuff going on. It's so much fun. And so just seeing the stuff getting set up excited me. I'm looking forward to taking my son to whatever I can, and my daughter to, you know, I know, again, a lot of stuff's not going to be the same, which is unfortunate, but it'll still be pretty cool. And if you lived here long enough to remember past times we've hosted the Super Bowl, it, to me, it's always been a blast. I mean, I remember the first one for me was, we had it in the early 80s with the Redskins and the Raiders, but I was too young to remember much about that. But, of course, the 1990 season, we had it, and that was the year when the Bills played the Giants and Scott Norwood missed the kick wide right and all that, and the Whitney Houston national anthem and the Gulf War. And that was an incredible experience. And my dad happened to live in the old neighborhood right across the street of Himes there. He lived back in there, and I parked cars. There was an empty lot next to his house, and we used it to park cars even though we didn't own the lot. I remember making like $200 parking cars, and I was 10. It was like, it felt like $1 million to me. And we watched the game outside. The flyover went right over the house. We could hear the stadium. It was great. And then, you know, there's been a few more over the years. But it's just really cool. It's a cool thing. And I can't even imagine what it would be like if the Bucks were actually playing. And it, hopefully we get to find out. But that much is still to be determined. So whatever you guys are doing, okay? And I encourage you, don't watch this game alone if you have that option. I mean, do social distancing, be mindful of all that. But if it's a buddy you hang out with all the time, if it's a buddy you haven't talked to in a long time, family, whoever it is, you know, just find someone else, go through your cell phone address book, or not address book, your cell phone numbers, you know, find somebody else who you know also cares about this game and say, hey, instead of us sitting alone in our houses, let's watch it together. Because this one, you know, we always maybe overuse the phrase, this doesn't happen very often, but this doesn't happen very often. And so these are the types of ones that you remember not just a month from now or a few months from now. You remember this years from now, whether they win or lose, because it's so special and it's so rare. And it's a chance, you know, this team that we all follow, if you're listening to this show, you're a Bucks fan. For many reasons, whether you're from the area or whether something else drew you into being a Bucks fan, whatever it was, you know, there's 32 teams in the league, and this one is yours. And there's only four of them left, and yours happens to be one of them. And so beyond whether they win or lose and beyond all that, it's just a cool chance to get together with people. It's a cool chance, an excuse, really, just to make something fun, make an event out of it, because that's what it's all about. At the end of the day, that is what this is all about. I mean, whether the Bucks win or lose won't get you a promotion at work. You don't get a bonus check for the further the Bucks advance in the playoffs. You just have the fun of the experience, right? And it's all about the experience. So enjoy this one. And if they can get by this one, there's going to be an even cooler experience waiting on the other side of that. I'm not even going to think about that right now. There's no need to talk about it yet. Focus on the Bucks and the Green Bay Packers Sunday at 3:05. So until then, thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform and letting me come on the single best place anywhere for Bucks coverage. and get this show in front of you guys. I appreciate them giving me the platform, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Bobby Fenton. That's the NFC Championship Game edition of the Free Stretch. One way or the other, I will talk to you next week. And until then, no matter where you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.